All right. Well, if you're ready, our next speaker is Laszlo Peter from Sun Microsystems. And I just wanted to say very quickly that initially this distro summit came out of a couple of distro-specific summits. There was Debian, and OpenSolaris was actually the other one that ran very high, had a lot of interest. And we also had a number of OpenSolaris contributions to this distro summit, and some of them were too specific, and some of them, like Laszlo's, actually, I think, are going to have a lot of value to this distro summit. So I'm looking forward to what he's going to tell us about SourceJuicer, which I think ties in pretty well into what I said earlier about being able to automatically build packages. So without further ado, Laszlo, here's to you.
So, like the title says, this is about the OpenSolaris contrib build and review service. And before people start leaving the room, there is going to be a connection with Linux distributions. And I hope there's going to be value in listening to this talk for Linux users. So, I'm going to describe what SourceJuicer is, go into more detail what the connection with Linux distributions is, describe some of the features, and I'm not a marketing person, I'm not trying to convert anyone to OpenSolaris or anything like that, but I'm going to show some of the technologies behind SourceJuicer that I think are quite neat, and there's going to be demos. Before I go any further, has anyone in this room used OpenSolaris before? Eight, one, two, three, four, five. Oh, good. More than I thought. Fine. And anyone used packages from the contrib repository at all? No? Okay. So for the rest of you, there's not a lot that you need to know about OpenSolaris for the purpose of this talk, but it's basically the roots are from Solaris. It has a pretty decent GNU user land at this point, and it's got a brand new package management system replacing the old System 5 release for SVR4 packages that Solaris uses for delivering binaries. And I might talk a little bit more about that later. So what is SourceJuicer? We started this project as a new build system for the desktop components of OpenSolaris, which is my team. I work in a desktop team, so we build GNOME and a bunch of other things that somehow get related to the work we were doing. We wanted to replace the old build system we had with something new and cool, and when the OpenSolaris core team found out about our project, they sort of hijacked it and wanted to use it for the contrib package repository, which is obviously it's a package repository where users can contribute packages. And it was the first release on OpenSolaris.org was less than a year ago. Since then, we have, I'd say, about 350 tested packages in contrib and a few thousand untested ones. And I'll get to that later. It's a web service. It's written in Python, uses a MySQL backend and Django. And the primary design goal was to make it very easy to add packages in the system while trying to keep the quality at a reasonable level. So the Linux connection is that it uses a build system that is based around RPM-like spec files. And when I say RPM-like, it means it looks like an RPM spec file, but it has some extra tags in it that RPM doesn't have. And there are some RPM-specific elements that we just ignore. But in theory, it's possible to use RPM spec files in our system, and it's possible to tailor our spec files to use them with RPM. And I'm going to have a demo of that later. And so the roots of this is that we had about how many years? 6 years ago, Sun had a product called JDS, a Java Desktop System, which was a Linux desktop based on SUSE Linux. And so it was an RPM-based system, and we needed some way to build the same desktop packages on Linux and on Solaris. So because SUSE was based on RPM, the obvious choice was to write a tool that can build Solaris packages from RPM spec files. So how does it work? Anyone who registered on opensolaris.org, fill in your details, kind of registration, so you have a username, can submit an RPM-like spec file. And the minimum that we require is they submit a spec file and a license file. And then that starts a review thread where anyone can view it, and anyone with an account can add comments. And some contributors who have approval rights need to go in and validate it. So who are the people with approval rights? These are, in the Open Solaris governance, they are called the core contributors. So people who have done a lot of work in a specific community group. So these are not people who work for Sun. These can be anyone in the community. And we have quite a few non-Sun approvals. And the validation is basically just taking a quick look at the what's been submitted, make sure it's nothing, you know, malicious, or that making sure that the license file that was submitted actually matches what the package is. And then it's a matter of clicking on the validate button. It goes into an automatic build system, which will try to build it. And if the build passes, then it gets automatically published in a pending repo, which is kind of like a testing repository for contrib. So those are all packages that have been submitted by someone, and they build successfully, but we don't know anything about them. We don't know how well they work. And then people can go and install packages from pending, and if it worked for them, they can go and add comments or tell other contributors, and those with approval rights can vote for packages or against them if they find issues with them. And they are supposed to test the packages at least briefly before they vote for a package. And if they get I think they need 2 votes for a package to be published into the contrib repository for the general public. Yep.
What happens if those votes don't get passed? If there are too many packages and too little?
Yeah, we have like thousands of untested packages right now, but there's another reason for that, and I'll get back to that later. But what happens is when people do care about a package, they just go to the mailing list usually and say that I'm using this and it works great, and can someone vote for it? Yeah, the way around that is just to grow the number of people who have approval rights, and that is gradually happening. But you can still use the package even if it's not in the contrib repository, but we expect a higher standard of a quality standard for the contrib packages. The build environment. The packages are all built in their own kind of like virtual build machines. These are OpenSolaris zones. A zone as you can think of a zone like a change root environment, except it's a bit more. It's got its own network stack and other things, but for the purpose of this talk, you can think of it as a change root environment. The spec file has to specify the download location, which has to be the upstream, all the dependencies, and obviously the build and packaging of the component. And the build environment that is the package is going to be built in is completely minimal. It's just whatever is absolutely necessary to boot the zone, and some build tools that everyone needs, like the compiler. So the packages must declare all of their build time dependencies. And I think this is quite important and probably useful for Linux distributions as well, because you probably have the same problems. What we are trying to solve here was that if your package uses like autoconf, it will, when you run configure, it will just pick up the dependencies on the system, and depending on what you have installed on the system, it will change the binaries. So it will change the features of your binary package. And we don't want that, obviously. We want our packages to be consistent. What happens is, if you have a full system that you use for building, then you might have an additional package added, and then your package gets built. It will pick up, configure will pick up the new dependency, changes your package, and you may not even have the dependency in the spec file, so the dependency may be missing from the binary package, so it all gets messy. So to avoid that, and the other thing, sorry, is just you can get into a situation where you have like circular dependencies in packages and you won't even notice because you have everything installed. So we decided to use a minimal build environment and just install everything that the package claims to depend on, nothing else. Yeah, these are some of the neat things that we use for the build. Zones are on ZFS are really cool because ZFS has this feature of taking snapshots of a file system and cloning it and rolling back to a previous snapshot. So we can create basically a new build system in a matter of seconds just by we set up a what we call a template zone, which is this minimal build environment. And then when we need to build something, we just say clone this template, and it's almost instant. The zones have their own network stacks, so in the case, or can have their own network stacks. In this case, we just disable all networking in a zone to make it more secure. So all the network operations, like downloading the sources or installing the dependent packages from the package repository are done in the global zone. So like the global zone is like the metal itself, basically. So you download there and copy the files into the build zone. And then you can log into to this build zone, run the build, and if the build passes, we run some extra sanity checks, and then it gets published. The package gets published in a repository that lives inside its zone without any network connection. And then we go back to the metal and republish it to the pending repo. And then at the end of the build, we can either throw away this build zone or just roll back to a snapshot, which is, I think, the solution that we chose. So ZFS basically it does a copy and write mechanism. When you take a snapshot, it will start copying files that you change, and at the end of the day, when you're finished with the build, you can just say, forget all that. One of the questions I get from, especially from Solaris people who often dislike this method of building from specifiers, why did we choose specifiers? So I already mentioned that we have this Linux-based product called Java Desktop System, which had nothing to do with Java, it was just a marketing name, but it was based on SUSE Linux, so it was built from specifiers, and we needed some way to do the same, so we had a tool called Package Build that built, that behaved exactly like RPM build, taking the spec file and doing exactly the same steps, but at the end it created a Solaris package. So we had this tool already, and it worked well for the desktop team for the past 6 years. And it had to be modified to support the new packaging system in OpenSolaris. There's been a community of people who write spec files growing since Package Build was released, and people outside of Sun who just needed something packaged up, and they wrote a spec file because it was easier. They could just take a spec file from Linux, tailor it, build it, and they share these spec files in a repository on SourceForge. It's called Spec Files Extra. So we had quite a few of those, and we thought it would be a good idea to reuse those spec files for the contrib packages. And also, there are so many people who know how to write spec files and how to work with spec files in RPM, so it was a good idea to reuse that rather than do something different that they need to learn. And of course, there's the cooperation with RPM, these Linux distros, which I personally think is very important. In the past, I know I took spec files from like Fedora and just wrapped them up into Solaris spec files, and we are probably still shipping some of those in Solaris and Open Solaris, and it's very easy to do and saves a lot of time and reinventing the wheel. So how are these spec files different from RPM spec files? There are some extra elements in the spec files, extra tags mostly that add additional information to the spec files that is needed for our packaging mechanism. And there are some elements of RPM that we don't implement, and that's sad, but it's just basically just because of time constraints, not because of a decision. And some of them are just elements that just don't map to anything in Solaris. There's another kind of cool thing is that we can have hierarchical spec files. I'll show you examples of that in the demos. We can basically wrap Linux spec file in a Solaris spec file, and without repeating everything that is in the Linux spec file, you can say, you just do, say, the prep section of the Linux spec file. So the Solaris spec file basically just adds the Solaris specific bits, packaging, package names, dependency names that are different. And we can leave the Linux spec file unchanged. And the another reason why this is another reason why this is often useful is when we need to, say, build the same code, 32-bit and 64-bit, and Solaris, they're all usually packaged together because you can run 32-bit or 64-bit on the same kernel. So when you do the same thing twice with different compiler flags, we don't have to repeat everything, you just say, now I'm changing the flags and redo this. Not sure what's going on here. Oh, the demo. There you are. So, yeah, I wanted to first show you how source user looks like. So this is just the main page. This is where users can submit batches. They even give it a name, just something to identify it. They need to upload at least one spec file and one copyright file. And they can add additional files, patches, man pages, other sources, as like if you want to add a file that is not part of the, you don't want to patch it, and you don't want to basically you don't want to patch it and it's not part of the source tarball. It's like it's for use with the source tag in RPM. And we've got some other stuff. The base spec is what I call the Linux spec previously, which is like something that you refer to from the main spec, and you can include files from package build spec files. When you submit it, it goes for review. And we have a number of packages here. So the ones with the X haven't been validated yet. The ones with the tick have been. Let's look at one of these. So this guy uploaded a spec file, which looks very much like an RPM spec file, except it has a few extra things, like include Solaris Ink. It sets up a few like compiler flags and things like that. And we have some special tags that you don't have in RPM. Some meta information for our packaging system. Otherwise, it looks exactly like an RPM spec file. So this is the validation part where I'm supposed to check that the copyright file looks reasonable and the spec file looks reasonable, and check the community side. And if it all looks right, I just click on validate, which I'm not going to do now because I haven't done these steps. Or you can add comments. And here's one that has been validated. Not much activity. Basically, the submitter resubmitted the spec file. I wonder if I can find anything. And there's nothing that has votes here because they usually get into contrib pretty quickly. If I go to the build page, this is where everything that has been validated will ultimately go and get built. Someone was experimenting with this spec file quite a bit. You can click on the log to find out what happened. The preparation is just setting up the zone, what dependencies were specified in the spec file, and what how they translate to IPS packages, and what got installed in the zone. And then the package build log looks like an RPM log, except in this log it's prefixed with package build, but it looks exactly like an RPM log. And then you had some compile failures. And here's one that passed. Yeah, that's not what I wanted to show, actually. If it passed, you can click on the install link, and it will open in the package manager, and you can install it for testing. And then, because this passed the build, you can, go to, I wonder why it doesn't have a link, but I'll show you another one. So this one passed, and it has a link to the review page. And if I go back to the review page now, I can, there's a new tab here that says vote. I can add comments and then vote plus one and minus one based on what I found when I tested it. And then my juicer is just a collection of things I submitted or commented on. And for my own submissions, I can always go back and change things. I can change the identifier, delete files, completely withdraw my submission, or I can resubmit files. So that's what it does currently. What I wanted to show you is how some of our, actually, let me check if it's visible. So I was looking at my screen, and I'm not sure if you saw everything on this screen when I was showing it, because half of the screen is missing, but hopefully you did. So I wanted to show you a few spec files that we use. This is not actually in the contrib repository, it's in the desktop, the OpenSolaris desktop, where we also use the same mechanism. So it also, it looks like a normal RPM spec file with, you know, all the different sections and change log and everything, except it adds, this is the base spec. So this is the Linux-like spec file that we can wrap in a Solaris spec file, and I'll show you how. The corresponding main spec file, sunwgdk.do.spec, has things like this here. Use gdk equals gdkdo.spec, it assigns a label to the Linux spec file, and then you can refer to sections of the Linux spec file, like gdkdo.version, which is the value of version in that spec file. Or it adds these ugly Solaris specific package dependencies. If you look at the build section, you can do things like gdk2.build, and this minus D tells it to run it in a subdirectory. And in this case, this is done because we're building gdk twice, one in 32 bits and one in 64 bits, so we are assigning another label to the same spec file. But before we do that, we change the flags slightly in these include files, and then we just run the same sections from the gdk2.spec file twice. The patches, this gets back to Martin's talk. We have in all the desktops patches, all the desktop spec files that we have some metadata for all the spec files, who wrote it, when. Well, this is before we started doing this, so that's why it's got an invalid date, but what type of patch. And we have feature patches, bug fixes, and bug fixes must have some sort of bug ID associated with them. I don't see an example of that here, but we also have branding. Yeah, here's one. Branding patches, which is what you call the distro specific patches. To reduce the number of, GDK has 14 patches, but to reduce the number of patches, we normally require every single patch to be submitted upstream if it makes sense. Meaning if it's, you know, a branding change, obviously it doesn't make sense to submit it upstream. And some of the features we have don't make sense to submit upstream if they're too specific to Solaris. But otherwise, every bug fix has to be submitted, and that's why they have to have a bug ID associated with them. In this case, a Bugzilla GNOME org bug ID. Okay, another thing I wanted to show is just how I can reuse spec files from Linux distributions and then the reverse as well. I downloaded I have to admit that it took me a while to find a package that just built out of the box. Just taking the spec file, it didn't use any thing that wasn't too specific to, say, Fedora, or it didn't use any, or SUSE, I think, in this case, or it didn't use any macros in the spec files that we didn't have or didn't define in our implementation. So I found the EFAX was quite a simple package. I think I downloaded this from SUSE. It's a source RPM, like it's got two patches, a spec file, and a source tarball. The only a couple of things I needed to add. Oh, I better load it here. Right? So a couple of things I needed to add was that the names of the dependencies are different. We have all our package names currently are, or most of them are prefixed with some W that's actually changing, that's going to be different with IPS, but we still have the old package name, so I needed to change that. If I make this change, with this, if OS construct, I can make the changes so that the spec file can still be built on Fedora without having to take out anything, but it will also build on OpenSolaris. That's the only other thing I need to add is just a copyright file, because we require a copyright file for our packaging system. Every package has a separate file. So, like normally in RPM, you would have just an indication of the license. And in our packaging system, we actually require the full license text. And then I can just say package build minus BA EFAX spec, and hopefully it will build. Yeah, that's actually just this is not using source user, it's just package build, which is the engine behind. That's it. That's a good point. I can try to submit it, and I haven't done this at home, you know, to test. So hopefully it will work. And as somebody mentioned before, it's more difficult in big corporations for employees to contribute than it is for external people. That's true. I'm actually some employees are not supposed to upload anything that hasn't been legally reviewed. So, that's it. Wrong spec file naming convention, okay. Yeah, okay. So, to keep keep it sort of nice and clean, we enforce a naming convention for patches. You probably don't see the end of it. The naming convention is that it has the upstream name, like EFX, so that's fine. But then we've got a two-digit number which specify the order of adding the packages, the patches, sorry. And then like a one-word description, and then .diff. So we'd have to rename these patches to like efx01.diff and 02.undefined.diff. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Just one try, and if it doesn't work, I'll just give up. Like I said, I haven't tried this at home, so. So it's now doing some cursory checks on what I submitted. Like okay, so it was successful. It opened a review thread. Because I have rights, I can actually validate it for myself, but I'm just set, you know, to leave it for now. And it will be built. I can install it, and you have to believe me that it works. So any questions? Don't have much time left. No?
I have a question.
Okay.
So can you run this locally on your machine, or are you always bound to use this chooser.opensolaris.org? What's the license?
I can actually, we can run package build locally, and you could create a zone locally. And that's a good point. We don't provide anything that it's easy to set up, but we don't actually provide any help with doing that. But without that, you can still, you know, just run package build locally, see if you're, and that's what people usually do. Just see if it builds. If it does on your system, you upload it and it'll get built for you.
Okay. And what is the license on Source Juicer?
So, again, it's one of the problems at big corporations. It's we always wanted this to be open source, and it is going to be released. But the only problem is that there are a number of steps that we need to go through before it can be released. But it will be released because there is actually interest from I think like there was someone from a university who wanted to use this to build their own packages. So yeah, it's in the process of being released, and I assume that because it's part of the Open Solaris project, it will be the CUDL or CDDL license.
And how easy is it going to be for someone to swap out all of the internals? Like, say, you want to use all of this, the entire workflow, but actually not have package build in the background and not have zones, but have Struth and Deb making devices. Is it trivial to do? Is it modular?
No, I'd say it would be pretty difficult to do.
Pretty difficult to
yeah.
do. All right.
So the whole idea is very much, based on, using the zones and using spec files. So it keeps calling package build for a lot of things, for extracting information from spec files, etc.
Okay, but the main idea is there. That's good. Cool. Any questions? Any other questions? No? Then I suppose we can wrap this up, and you guys can have a head start into the tea break and be first in line for the coffee. All of that. We reconvene here at 3:45, if I'm correctly informed. So please be here on time if you're interested in the next session, which will be Dustin talking to us about Launchpad.